Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two. Mitchell Henderson is back tonight with another interesting look at what we call geopolitics, world geopolitics. And a couple of 3 weeks ago, we were all thinking that we're getting very close to a potential nuclear conflict. I don't think it's time to forget about that, to retire it to the back shelf. I think it's still very much on the front counter. I do not trust NATO. I know who's behind NATO. So do you. You just heard about it in the last hour. So what we have in the near future is anybody's guess. We have the South China Sea. We have China-Taiwan. We have Ukraine. We have Finland, Sweden. We have the northern end of NATO. We have all kinds of things, not to mention Iran, India, Pakistan, India, China, North Korea, South Korea. It's a long list. You get the idea. So, no, it's not time to step down very far away from being eminently concerned about the potential use of nuclear weapons on an international stage. My opinion. Mitchell, welcome back.
It's good to be back, and I think you made a very good point there. Okay, things are not simmering down; they're heating up. Okay,
thank you.
What I want to do tonight is I kind of want to go one thing the press never does. Okay, well, let me explain what as a police investigator, what I always had to do is concern myself mostly with motive. Okay, because if you want to catch the criminal, you have to figure out why the criminal did it. Okay,
right.
So the past history of the crime, the history before the crime happens, is very important to understanding the crime. Okay, so that's something that the media never does. They never tell us, you know, like the perspective of the other countries and stuff. Okay, so tonight I want to kind of go over some things. To give some perspective on it. So I'm going to start with the Sri Lanka experience, okay? So Sri Lanka was previously called Ceylon. It is a big island off the southeastern coast of India. It is a template for the follies of wokeism. The Portuguese occupied it for 200 years, leaving day-to-day life alone. Then the Dutch occupied it for about 200 years, actually colonizing it, in that they imposed Dutch culture and law. In the early 1800s, the British took over and colonized it. The British rule meant the practical destruction of the locals' culture. The people of Sri Lanka were Sinhalese Buddhists. The British needed cheap labor for British East India Company's plantations. The British imported Tamil Hindus from South India. This as a racial or ethnic colonization. Before the British left, they initiated affirmative action that had a preference for the Tamils and other traditionally marginalized peoples. We hear that all the time, okay? That's their excuse, which meant that the others with lesser ability were promoted and given contracts to the detriment of the Sinhalese. This is happening in the USA now with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, leading the way for the Great Replacement. This was Sri Lanka's experience of the British replacing them with Tamils that the British bought over. There's a big difference between Sinhalese, but there's a big difference between these people. Sinhalese are more like Malays and are not from the Indian mainland. The difference between these people are stark. When Ceylon gained independence, they scrapped the laws in favor of the Tamils, because the Tamils make maybe one in six people, okay? Yeah. An alien culture and people that the British colonized their land with. After a while, the Tamils became upset with losing their advantage and formed the Tamil Tigers Revolutionary Group. The Tamil Tigers fought a vicious war against the Sinhalese, and it was they who created the modern suicide bombers by getting people to get near targeted public officials and then blowing themselves up in order to assassinate them. Within the last decade, the Sinhalese invaded Tamil Tigers' territory and defeated them. Sri Lanka was condemned by the West for trying to preserve their nation. Okay, so the next project was to fully embrace the Green New Deal. They became the darling of the World Economic Forum and were held out as a shining example of the rest of the world to follow. They forced their farmers to become organic farmers, disallowing the use of fertilizers. We see the Dutch doing this now, and you can see massive protests by Dutch farmers because they are banned from using fertilizers. They raise the cost of food for the consumer. In the past month, Sri Lanka has become a failed state, and its economy has collapsed. There was rioting all over the nation. The president and other official and economic leaders had to flee the nation. The World Economic Forum has now removed all of their articles on Sri Lanka from their website. Success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. Okay? So Sri Lanka became an example of both the failure of affirmative action and the catastrophe of the Green New Deal. We are currently making the exact same mistakes as Sri Lanka under the pedophile Marxist Biden regime. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as wasting money the USA does not have to support a Green New Deal, is going to turn the USA into a Sri Lanka. But we are a much bigger nation with a greater internal fault lines than Sri Lanka has. Our population is armed. Theirs were not. It should be obvious that the violence, crime, and banditry will be far worse here in the USA when we become a failed state. I say when and not if. The pedophile Marxist Biden regime will learn nothing from experience. You can plainly see that their policies are detrimental to the American defense and safety and definitely run against their constitutional duty to provide for the general welfare. They are providing for the general destruction of our nation. Okay, so my next topic is why India and Indonesia sided with Russia at the G20 meeting. Okay, India is a nation that has been invaded repeatedly in their history. The Muslim Mughals invaded and ruled India from 1200 to the 1700s. The Muslims considered the Hindus as idolaters and tried to convert all Hindus to Islam. 100 million Hindus were exterminated under Islamic rule in a time where India only had one-tenth of its current population. This was direct murder, not like the 100 million that died from the Columbian Exchange when Europeans came to America. They perished mostly from disease. For example, settlers in New England found lots of land already cleared by the Native Americans because disease had already killed the original inhabitants of. Okay, the killing of Hindus in India was a direct murder, not famine, not starvation, nothing else. It was directly killing them. Okay, the Hindu nationalists, they remember this. Okay, the British took India from the Muslims and occupied it from the 1700s to 1947. For almost 800 years, the people of India did not rule themselves. In 1947, India got its independence. India also had to partition. West Pakistan and Bangladesh, traditionally a part of India, going to the Muslims. Partition cost millions their lives through communal strife. And the Muslims were not happy with what they got in Pakistan. Although India became the world's largest democracy, they were ruled by the Congress Party under Nehru, and they were Fabian socialists that attacked Hindus and Hindu culture, favoring anybody but Hindus in their affirmative action scheme. So under the Congress Party, they were colonized by Marxism. Okay, Nehru railed against India's caste and priest-ridden Hindu culture. Because Indian independence was in effect for anybody but the Hindus, Indira Gandhi was assassinated. More assassinations would follow. However, due to its history of being under foreign occupation, the Congress Party formed independent India's foreign policy based on Panchasila. This included five principles. One, mutual respect for other nations. Two, territorial integrity and sovereignty. Three, non-aggressions. Four, non-interference in other nations' internal affairs. Five, equality and mutual benefit and peaceful coexistence. This was their foreign policy thing, and it actually is a statement of the way they wanted to be treated. Okay.
Got it.
Meant that India would be neutral. They would treat other nations like Panchasila outlined and expected other nations to respect them in the same way. The United States always orders them about and through NGOs interferes in almost every sector of Indian culture. Nehru wanted to lead the third world of non-aligned nations. The first world was the capitalist West. The second world was the communist nations. The third world was the rest. Third world did not mean poor. It just meant non-aligned. India's relations with the United States was negative from the beginning. In 1948, Pakistan invaded Kashmir in North India. The U.S. supplied Pakistan with weapons and support at the U.N., while Russia supplied India with weapons and support at the U.N. The treaty ending the war called for plebiscites in Kashmir, but it never happened because the USA was pumping arms into Pakistan, and it looked like Pakistan was ready to just take Kashmir if they did not like the outcome. So why do it? So Pakistan again attacked them in 1965. Russia negotiated an end to the war. The United States was on Pakistan's side, even though it was a military dictatorship ruled by Ayub Khan. The USA had had a military alliance with Pakistan against democratic India called CENTO, which meant Central Asia Treaty Organization. This belies our propaganda that we support democracies. We have never done such a thing. If a democracy does not obey us, we will support its enemies. And we've always done that. In 1970, Pakistan held elections in which the Bangladesh Awami League democratically won a majority. Pakistan dictator Yahya Khan did not like the outcome, so he had the opposition leader arrested and ordered his army to execute all of the winning party's leadership in an intentional murder that killed tens of thousands. The Awami League asked its followers to declare independence from Pakistan as the new nation of Bangladesh. Fighting was fierce and relentless. Over 10 million Bangladeshis fled to India. The United States backed Pakistan and sent a nuclear carrier group to the coast of India to back them. The Russians sent their navy to keep American warships out of Indian waters. I knew we backed them because I was in the army, and we were alerted from mobilization to go to Pakistan and fight for the oppressive and undemocratic Yahya Khan. You see, we do not back democracies. This was a bad policy on our part. The nuclear carrier group is what convinced India that they needed nuclear weapons, which they had by 1974. After 2000, Hindu nationalism was ascendant in India. Prime Minister Modi leads the Hindu Nationalist Party. This was a return to traditional values and away from the Marxism of the Congress Party. I've talked to Hindu nationalists. Only now do they feel that India is finally free, no thanks to the USA. The Hindu nationalists look at the West as totally decadent. One Hindu nationalist described to me from a Hindu point of view why that is. In the Hindu caste system, the highest caste is the Brahmins, or priestly class. The next highest is the Kshatriya, which is the government/military caste. Next down is the Vaishya, or the business merchant class caste, and below that are the Shudra, or the working class. They point out to me that in the beginning, through the Middle Ages, the biggest buildings in Western city were the religious temples and churches. Then a European empires grew. The biggest buildings became government and military buildings as the power of government government grew. Then as business became the main factor in the nation, business buildings became the biggest buildings in town. Finally, every city had to have a sports team for which the people and the working people's sports stadiums were built because they were the biggest buildings in civilization. They say that this in their mind is all the evidence they need to demonstrate that America, which has decayed exactly in this fashion, is an evil empire that can never be trusted. Okay, Russia has always been there for India. We have been a problem for India. So they will not be taking any orders from us. India says no to sanctioning Russia. Okay, so let's move on to Indonesia. Indonesia was a Dutch colony that the Japanese occupied in World War II. After the Japanese left, the Indonesians declared independence. The British sent troops to secure Indonesia for the Dutch. The Indonesians took only 3 weeks to trounce the British, and after Indonesia refused to allow the Dutch to dictate a new form of government, the Dutch decided in 1947 that they had to conduct a police action against the new leadership to make them obey. It failed, so the Dutch started another police action to make the Indonesians pay. It did not work, so the Dutch gave independence to Indonesia in 1949. In 1957, Indonesian President Sukarno declared that Indonesia was not going to obey Western ideas and standards. He insisted on a traditional Indonesian political system. The Indonesian way of deciding important questions, he argued, was by deliberation and consensus. This was a traditional village government called Mufakat. Sukarno had to balance army power with communist power. Sukarno had to rein in the army from attacking the communists. Sukarno pursued neutrality in foreign affairs and held the 1955 Bandung Conference to make himself the leader of the Third World Non-Aligned Nations. In 1965, Sukarno also withdrew Indonesia from the United Nations, which he saw as a lackey for European and American imperialism. Sukarno, an Indonesian independence hero, was not obeying the West and not obeying the United Nations. So, of course, President Johnson tasked the CIA to make the necessary changes. The CIA got the Indonesian army to overthrow Sukarno and get rid of the communists. The army exterminated the communists, systematically hunting down anybody that had any communist sympathies. Over 1 million people were murdered, and their bodies clogged the river up, the rivers up in Indonesia. There were so many people killed. One of Mel Gibson's first movies was called My Year of Living Dangerously, and it was about the Indonesian coup of 1965. Who supported this and made it happen? The Marxist Democratic Party of the USA, the same people who passed in 1965 the Hart-Sellers Immigration Act that restricted the immigration of white people and promoted the immigration of non-white people to start a great replacement, and passed affirmative action to replace white people in the workplace and management. The army dictator who took over after Sukarno called this the new order. His name was General Suharto. Finally, Suharto was overthrown by the late 1980s, and the new government was well aware of the role that the CIA played in supporting a coup and installing a new government that was a puppet of the CIA. The post-Suharto move was moved back to traditional Indonesian values and conservative Muslim values, of which neither correspond to Western values. Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim nation, just as India is the world's biggest democracy. They say no to the West because our values are completely opposite of theirs. They refuse to impose sanctions on Russia. Just think, we condemn Russia over security concerns in the Ukraine. Well, all the way across the Pacific, the United States overthrew a government they didn't like, okay, and supported the murder of 1 million people. Okay, somehow that's okay. But what Russia cannot do what the United States and Western Europe can do. They're not allowed, they're not judged by the same standard. Indonesia and India are aware that Russia is not judged by the same standard. But that's why they will not support the United States with sanctions and stuff. Okay, so let's go to why China makes a big deal of Chairman Pelosi's visit. China was one of the world's greatest empires and culture stretching back to 2000 BC. It is the only nation that has lasted from then to now. China has existed for 4,000 years. Modern Europe is only 500 years old, and America 250 years old. China demands respect. Its worldview is nothing like ours. The West and China started parting ways in the 1800s. In 1849, the British were trading in Canton. The Chinese emperor was alarmed because the British were selling opium to the Chinese and getting them addicted, and because the British took only silver for the opium trade, which they feared would deplete the national treasury. This is how the British royals in the Delano family got their fortune. This is how the Delano's grandson, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was able to become president. The Chinese emperor sent Commissioner Lin to Canton to stop the opium trade. Commissioner Lin burned all of the opium he could find. The British declared war, and this became the first opium war of 1839-1844. The British defeated the Chinese. The terms to end the war were harsh on China, that just wanted to protect its people from drug trafficking. The British demanded that China give them Hong Kong to open 5 more ports to Western trade, for China to have Western-style diplomatic relations by allowing ambassadors to reside in China, by allowing foreigners to live and conduct commerce in the 5 new port cities. I believe only Canton was open to foreigners before that. They also demanded that China pay a huge indemnity for the UK for loss of commerce during the war, as well as to allow the British to collect tariffs from internal Chinese trade. The British also got most favored nation trading status. The Americans took advantage of the situation and got freedom of trade treaties just like the British. The French got the same, but added to make Roman Catholicism legal in China. Okay, this is a direct attack on their culture. Imagine the Sinaloa cartel invades the United States so that they can sell cocaine up here.
Sure. Well, they're damn near doing it now.
China, 180,000
already in August across the border, something like that.
Almost
200,000.
Yeah. I mean,
there's no border.
Ceylon's replacement of Tamils.
I agree.
Putting Tamils in to replace the Sinhala.
Yes, indeed. Well, okay, hold on, gang. We'll be right back with Mitch in just a few minutes. The more the world changes, the more it stays the same as we move toward the Great Reset. Back in a minute. Okay, we're back with Mitch and getting a look at part of the country, part of the world that very few of us spend time. It's almost like President John Tyler. Very few of us hear about him. We don't hear much about the inner workings of Malaysia, Indonesia, India. We don't understand. There are almost 2 billion people there, not including China. These are huge things, and we're watching. Go ahead, Mitch. Very interesting.
Okay, so, however, the British were not satisfied. They wanted foreigners allowed to travel or live anywhere in China to have ambassadors in the capital city of Beijing, which was the forbidden city of the emperor, and no foreigner could set foot there. Okay, it was their custom, their culture. Okay, the Americans and French also wanted Protestant missionaries to work freely in China and make it so China had no jurisdiction over any foreigner that traveled in China. So they started the Second Opium War. The opium trade had picked up greatly since the First Opium War. This was the ultimate disrespect for the Chinese culture, people, and government. Okay? The Chinese considered us barbarians. Okay? And so they were humiliated by the barbarians ordering them about and imposing things on them. Sort of the way the United States treats Ukrainians now, they're just cannon fodder for the woke culture and religion that we have.
And Putin said so today. Putin said that exact thing today. I mean, as if anyone needs to say it. We and NATO, our lackeys, our flunkies, are just pushing, human bodies into the Russian meat grinder. So what's happening? Never mind, everything you hear out of Kiev is a lie or a distorted truth or quasi-reality. It's all bullshit, all of it. And Putin said today, the U.S. is using Ukrainians, men, for the most part, as cannon fodder. It's precisely what they're doing. I had a story the other day about how the Ukraine government, the Zionist Ukraine Bolshevik communist government, is chopping open corpses and taking out their vital organs, if they're not damaged, and selling them on the market. They're making money hand over fist over there. It's the most depraved country. Well, what it is, it's Khazaria. Basically, it used to be. Same area. So you got to keep that in mind. It's disgusting, and they're trying to shell the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe to break it down, melt it down, and make the entire Donbass unlivable. That's what they're doing. That's what the Ukes are doing. Go ahead.
They're totally immoral. So the British, U.S., and French got what they wanted, plus the legalization of opium in China. Has America ever gone to war for a less worthy cause than promoting drug trafficking and massive drug addiction in a foreign land? We would think that is a horrible thing, okay, but that's what we did. So the student of, a student of an American missionary in Canton named Hong Chu Chuan started a new Christian movement in South China called the Taipings. Remember, we fought a war to get Christian missionaries into China. The Taipings rebelled against the emperor. Between 1840 and 1854, the Taiping Rebellion took 78 million Chinese lives. This is well before they had a billion people. So that was substantial. It was a shock to China. Okay, the foreign powers took control of major ports and ruled them directly after this. In 1894, 1895, the Japanese, organized like the European powers, invaded China and took Taiwan and Korea from the Chinese. By 1898, the average Chinese was sick and tired of living under Western control. Rebels organized into Chinese boxing clubs and taught martial arts. They wanted the foreign devils out of their land. In 1900, the boxers rebelled and attacked the unwanted foreign embassies in Beijing. They killed missionaries and any foreigners found in the country. Allied European and Japanese forces put the rebellion down. The Manchu dynasty was totally humiliated by the Western powers, and by 1911, the Manchus were deposed during the Chinese Revolution under Sun Yat-sen. Foreign meddling in China caused much trouble. By the 1920s, the nationalists under Chiang Kai-shek and the communists under Mao Zedong had established themselves and began fighting. The Japanese formally started World War II in 1936 at the Marco Polo Bridge. China lost 20 million people during the war. During the war, aid to the nationalists fighting the Japanese was paltry. When the war was over, the nationalists had been decimated and exhausted. In 1949, Mao's communists took over the mainland, and the nationalists fled to Taiwan. The nationalists were actually exhausted by fighting the Japanese. Okay. So Taiwan held a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, which Jimmy Carter gave to Communist China in 1979. Carter was our first woke president, and that which he messed up is causing problems to this day, for example, Taiwan and Iran. China tried to say no to foreign control of China for 100 years, but the West dictated what China would or would not do. We opened China to get them to say no to Russia. China under Mao could say no to the West. China went to war with the West in 1949 and considered itself at war until at war with the West. They opposed economic. They opened up economically to the world to gain strength and to say no to us. So Chairman Xi, who by legal means is the ruler of the One China, told Chairman Biden on the phone that under no circumstances would China permit Speaker Pelosi to violate their territorial integrity and their national sovereignty. Speaker Pelosi went anyway. They just do not get it. If you look at the humiliation that China has suffered under the West for the past century and a half, isn't it very apparent why China said no to Speaker Pelosi's visit and why China is tired of us just ignoring their point of view? Chairman Xi said that there would be a military response, including the unification of Taiwan and an attack on Guam. Keep in mind that no one wants to attack a place at a place or a time that an enemy expects. China will pick the time and place, which should be September. Okay. So Speaker Pelosi may, in effect, be responsible for the deaths of hundreds of millions of people before the dust settles. Arrogance always causes miscalculation. Okay, so what do we do? Well, five more congressmen go over there. Okay, it's just like the colonial powers trying to shove something down China's throat. It's like we don't understand when somebody says no and they express their point of view, we totally ignore it out of our arrogance. Okay, so we have the worst government in our history. The pedophile Marxist Biden regime is destroying America as fast as they can. They openly and vocally hate America and Americans, so who should be surprised? Okay, they're doing exactly what they say. So my next topic is World War III is spiraling out of control. Okay, so the past week, Henry Kissinger, Kissinger, the architect of modern American diplomacy, called realpolitik, said that the USA is on the brink of war with Russia and China. Kissinger said that we are in a current situation due to a lack of any visionary leadership that can look ahead to the consequences of their policies. Kissinger told the Wall Street Journal that the absence of a great leader has driven the world to the precipice of war over Ukraine and Taiwan. He said that...
Quick note. Yeah. Next hour, David Oates will be here. He has brand new reverse speech examples from FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney Merrick Garland. And they are not good. Talk about betrayal of America. Wait until you hear these next hour. Go ahead.
Okay, so Kissinger said, quote, "We are at the edge of war with Russia and China over issues which we partly created without any concept of how this is going to end or what is supposed to lead to." Kissinger says that that our woke leadership, we should have taken Russia's security concerns seriously. Our woke leadership preaches diversity, equity, and inclusion, but will not consider the point of view or worldview of any other nature or culture has. They have created a delusional world view based on fabricated and immoral values, calling what is good evil and what is evil good. Kissinger continued by saying, "If you believe that the final outcome of your effort has to be the imposition of your values, then I think equilibrium is not possible." Okay, now when Kissinger says that it's like we were going to go to war with in Taiwan, this is not hyperbole. This man was involved in foreign policy his entire life. He does know what he's talking about, okay? The Russian and Chinese know this and have quit talking to us because it's pointless to have a discussion with someone who will never take you seriously. Zelensky has labeled Kissinger as an enemy of Ukraine. Zelensky hates for the truth to get out. He doesn't allow it in Ukraine and does not allow it here. Yes, folks, yeah. Zelensky decides what you hear. Okay. Russian Foreign Ministry Second Secretary Alexander Dovzhev said, "I'll be frank, we're not seeing grounds for finding compromises with Washington, which is not quite capable of negotiating." China's foreign ministry says, "Pelosi's visit was a wake-up call for China. Appeasing the USA will never work. Finally, fed up with showing unreciprocated goodwill, Beijing is breaking off multiple forms of dialogue with the United States. The U.S. believes it can get away with treating China as an enemy in most areas, but selectively demands cooperation with the U.S. on U.S. interests. This stems from the unilateral nature of U.S. foreign policy, which strives to maximize its own advantages at all costs and never offers serious concessions in negotiations with adversaries. But finally, the U.S. went too far, and China made it clear that it's now had enough." And this is from the Chinese Foreign Ministry. So they're telling us they've had enough. Okay, cooperation can now be conditioned on respecting China's core interests. They say that this is very overdue. China is tired of showing goodwill that the USA did not deserve. The Chinese policy emphasized stability and taking only calculated risks, but no more. That is over. It took Speaker Pelosi's trip to Taiwan to say we can no longer have business as usual.
Her trip was followed up 2 days later by a visit of a number of other congressional, and I think it was a senator. Anyway.
Can we be more tone deaf than that? Can we be more ignorant, more arrogant than to send five more Congress people over there?
No.
It shows we don't care about people. We don't even care about American citizens in this country. Okay.
Well, we shot down TWA Flight 800. Killing Congressman Larry McDonald, one of our great patriots. That plane was shot down to get rid of Larry. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. So the talk from Russia and China is very important. They are laying out their casus belli, or their reasons for war. Both Russia and China are on death ground here, which means they cannot possibly back down, or they will certainly be finished as nations. We have left them both with no reasonable alternatives, no face-saving way out, okay? We even talk about breaking Russia into 17 different countries. We're already deciding what's going to happen to Russia when we crush it, okay? So what is Russia supposed to do when we talk like that? Are they supposed to think, oh, yeah, well, they don't mean it? No, the Russians take it seriously. They think we do mean it, okay? So we have an unelected Marxist regime in Washington that, through their woke arrogance, are making decisions that will destroy most of humanity. We can call them stupid, but they, in fact, are doing exactly what the World Economic Forum wants, but never what the citizens of the United States want. Meanwhile, NATO keeps miscalculating on Russia. Russia has stated clearly that if U.S. Congress declares war, declares Russia a state sponsor of terrorism, it would mean an immediate break in diplomatic relations and war. They call this their point of no return. So what does Speaker Pelosi do? She informs U.S. Foreign Minister Blinken that if he does not do it, she will have Congress make it a law. Russia has said clearly that if Speaker Pelosi does it, it will be the point of no return in U.S.-Russian relations. Will Speaker Pelosi listen this time? Absolutely not. She has a one-track, self-serving, woke mind and cannot see the consequences of her pointless virtue signaling. Consider that her son is a male-to-female transgender and her husband was busted for DWI. If I was married to her, I would hit the sauce also. Speaker Pelosi gave the Chinese their pretext for war. Now she will give the Russians their pretext for war. Meanwhile, instead of building a world support for America's position, the world is pulling away from us. This past Sunday, Thailand started military drills with the People's Liberation Army. Nowhere is the decadence of the West more apparent than in Thailand. European and American pedophiles have been preying on their children for decades. The Thai government hates this. Our embassy in Bangkok will not get involved to stop these pedophiles. Our State Department actively shelters these pedophiles. I know this firsthand by working for the embassy in Thailand. Okay? I tried to take them. Solid, rock-solid evidence of pedophiles. And they just shot it down. They were like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that. And yet, at that time, pedophilia was supposed to be the major foreign policy thing of the United States, okay? But in practicality, they sheltered it. They protected it, okay? As I walked out of the offices after I tried to give the customs attaché the information, the Thai National Police guy that worked with him, he ran after me and he said, hey, Mr. Henderson, would you please give me the information? And I said, well, sure. He says, well, I hate what's going on in my country, and I hate what these people are doing. You know, if I can put one in jail, will you help? And I said, yeah. So I gave him all the information. I won't go into details about the case, but he had a customs contact in LAX, and I had the exact flight that this guy was taken back to the United States with child pornography, okay? And So when I checked out of Thailand, I was heading back to the States. He said, he gave me a business card of the customs agent in LAX, and he said, talk to this guy when you get back. So I checked through customs. I went to talk to him. I thought he was just going to tell me what happened to the guy. Well, they caught the guy with the film, and he's doing life in a federal penitentiary. Okay.
Which guy?
So
which guy?
Did,
the guy in Thailand?
The pedophile.
Or the guy?
No, the pedophile that I gave him information on.
Got it.
Okay.
Good.
So when I got back, he said, Tully wanted us to give this to you. This is a gift from the government of Thailand. And what it was is an envelope with $10,000 stuffed in it. And I said, well, you don't have to give it. This is free. I don't expect it. I mean, I work for the government. Why would I want money? And he said, no, this is a gift from Thailand. This isn't from the United States. So, of course I took it. It was well-earned money, I thought.
Yeah. Good.
So, that's how I know it firsthand. Okay. I mean, the government can say what they want, but what they do is a different story. Okay. So Spain will not back us in Kosovo against the Serbs. They say what America did in Yugoslavia was against international law and will take no part in the war against a righteous Serbia. Sweden agreed to extradite a wanted criminal to Turkey, but he is not even on Turkey's list of 73 wanted terrorists that they asked for. Finland is already threatening to work with Estonia to blockade Russia's access to the Baltic Sea. Once again, a blockade is a formal act of war. Finland
yes,
said
is.
That the Baltic belongs to NATO and Russia cannot use it, but it's international waters. I mean, they're actually going against what our policy in the Taiwan Strait and the South China Sea is. Okay,
right.
So this double standard just reeks. The West reeks with double standards, okay? Finland is acting as if Turkey will not insist on getting their terrorists back before admitting Finland to NATO. I don't think so. Turkey really wants those 73 terrorists, and if the virtue signaling Finns and Swedes don't give them their terrorists, they're not getting into NATO. Yeah, so Ukraine, just the gall of them, is demanding $5 billion a month to pay their troops and government officials. Americans, you've already been paying for Ukraine, for the Ukrainian and government, and they are demanding more. Okay, that money will go into the top people's pockets. Okay, it will not go to.
I figure about 70% of all that is being shipped in military armaments is going into the pockets of the Zionist.
I'll
stop there.
Definitely.
The Zionists.
That's why I said that getting a job as a real estate guy in Miami Beach is a good idea, because all these Ukrainians are going to come over here and buy mansions by the sea, okay? So Ukrainian troops complain that they are not paid or equipped. Ukrainian POWs do not want to return to Ukraine under any circumstances. Being a Ukrainian soldier
what Mitch just said, excuse me, was Ukrainian POWs, prisoners of war held by Russia. They don't want to be swapped back. They don't want to go home. Can't blame them. Now, yesterday, or was it today, Zelensky said not one single Ukrainian male may leave the country until he decides it's okay. They need bodies to be ground up in the Russian meat grinder.
We're supporting freedom in Ukraine. Freedom in
Put
Ukraine.
Those flags on your houses,
does that sound
everybody.
Free to you?
Put those flags on your house. You idiots. You fools.
So being a Ukrainian soldier means certain death. If not at the hands of Russians in combat, then at the hands of their own corrupt and harmless government.
You got it.
Right, exactly. So, it's just what does it take for our government to understand? Listen, they don't care what you think or feel about what they do domestically. Okay,
nope.
The same thing that they're doing here to the American people, they're trying to do that to all the nations in the world. Like, everybody in the world must be woke. Okay, well, people have traditional cultures in other countries, and they don't want woke culture. That is what Russia is fighting for. What they're fighting is for the freedom of their culture and their customs against wokeism. Okay, so this war, anybody who supports fighting for Ukraine is fighting for wokeism. Is not a war for any other reason except wokeism. It's for the Great Reset, the Great Replacement. They're replacing the Ukrainians now. They're killing them like crazy. It's Ukrainians shoving them into the breach to be killed. Okay, it's sort of like, wow, today, Colonel McGregor had written an article saying that the counteroffensive in Kherson has obviously failed. If you remember last week, I said that a supply dump over there for 45,000 tons of ammunition was blown up by the Russians. The Ukrainian people will run to the Russians and say, hey, there's a big depot here, or there's an important meeting here. They'll do that. They'll tell the Russians whatever they have to get liberated from the Zionist Zelensky regime. Okay?
Yep.
Who's going to liberate America from the Zionist Biden regime? That's my question. When are we going to be free?
Very important question.
When will our liberation come?
Well, it In the view of the Zionist international globalist elite, it will come through the tip of a hypodermic syringe and needle. That's how they're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
They've gotten 5 billion injected now. And as you know, Professor Dr. Dolores Cahill in Ireland has said very clearly, anyone who has even gotten one shot will be gone in 3 to 5 years. And I believe that she's...
It's from sudden adult death syndrome.
Well, that and many other things. Many other things.
Well, sudden adult death syndrome is just a blanket thing. It includes anybody that dies from the shot. So,
that's right.
It's just they're trying not to explain why
disease,
these people die.
CKD, heart attack. It goes on. We cover this 3 times a week here, as you know. Okay, Mitchell.
I personally had a cousin that died of prion disease from a COVID shot. It touches home. Okay,
understood.
Know people. You know?
Understood.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yep. No. That's it. Thank you. That was first class as always. And your book is getting a new chapter every week.
Yes, it do. Well, let's say our book. Okay.
It's quite an accomplishment. And they're all up to listen to under Mitch's, you look on the left side, you look at his columnist spot, they're all there. Okay. All right, my friend, you be well. Talk to you soon.
Okay, you Take too. Care. Thank you much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Mitch Henderson, the one and only. All right. We have so many wonderful people on this program, and they're all unique and utterly singular in their intelligence and their wisdom and their contributions. Okay. Back with David Oates, reversals of Christopher Wray, the FBI director, and Merrick Garland, the so-called attorney general of these formerly United States. And David told me they are not good. Stay tuned. That's next.